going to be a little spontaneous this evening. This is the Wednesday evening Bhagavad Gita class, and we're not going to be discussing Bhagavad Gita. We're going to be reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, continuing from where we left off last night. For those of you that weren't there, on Monday, we heard a description of the kingdom of God from third canto Bhagavatam. And from there was some discussion. There's a very wonderful description of Vaikuntha also in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, so we discussed that. And then there was some suggestion, well, let's go to Ayodhya and Dwarka next. So that's where we're going. The description of Gopakumar's entrance to the seven gates of Vaikuntha, what he saw, what he felt, what he did, what the Lord of Vaikuntha said, was so nice. I'm going to read it again. Now I have to find it. I won't read it again. I'm just going to read what happens while he's in Vaikuntha, because I can't find it right away. After some time, this is Gopakumar speaking. He's speaking to a brahmana here in this worldly plane. By the Lord's kindness, I obtained the intimate service of fanning him with a chamara, and I constantly felt bliss seeing the Lord as I played for him on my flute. By habit of my past practice, I would sometimes loudly repeat in various ways, "Oh, Krishna, Gopal!" I always sang openly in excellent prayers of his activities in Gokula, which reveal his greatest glories. The residents of that place, laughing with hearts melted by affection, sometimes came to me when I was outside the Lord's presence and spoke to me in no uncertain terms, like teachers instructing a student. The residents of Sri Vaikuntha said, "You should not address the Lord of Lords like this, and don't sing his praises that way. Just recite standard prayers about his unlimited, most amazing glories to annihilate the wicked and protect the civilized and to cheat Kamsa." The Lord disguised himself as a cowherd by his illusory energy. This is some of the standard prayers. Devotees of the Lord have little regard for tales of his illusory affairs. Such narrations may be suitable in the beginning of devotional practice, but they do not factually glorify the Lord. But some of those residents of Vaikuntha said, "Among the Lord's inconceivable activities, those playful pastimes are also his, so there is no fault in chanting about them." Then A few extremely exalted devotees stopped all the others and angrily said, "Really? Why are you talking like this, as if you had no intelligence? Krishna is so kind to his devotees that sankirtan of any of his activities is glorious and beneficial and satisfying to our divine master." Sri Gopakumar said to the Brahmin. At first, the words of the Vaikuntha Vasis had made me feel embarrassed. Then I felt satisfied, although in truth the inner core of my heart was not fully appeased. I felt somewhat discouraged that I couldn't see the unique form, pastimes, and other features of the lotus feet of my worshipful Lord, Madan Gopal. But then I would see Lord Vaikunthanath, the most exalted knower of everything, and as the darling son of Nanda Maharaj, see Lakshmi and Dara and Radhika and Chandravali, and see the Lord's personal attendants as the young boys of Braja. Yet my mind would still feel sad because I couldn't see the Lord and his companions play as they do here in the land of Braja. Occasionally, in the gardens of Vaikuntha, I would see my Lord appear, as in Braja, performing his pastimes, and I would see the gardens filled with the herds of cows. At other times, I would see him sitting, as usual, on his throne, in all splendor, but looking just like my Lord Gopal. Even so, because I knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because I remembered that I had come to Vaikuntha Loka, feelings of respect and reverence would arise in me, and these would block my pure love and leave my mind dissatisfied. The special favors that I had received from Gopaladev in my meditation, his embraces, his kisses, the mercy I had directly obtained, oh, these I couldn't have here, though they are what I desired, and so I felt afflicted. Sometimes the Lord would secretly go somewhere with a few of his intimate associates. Then everyone else who had been near him would lament, unable to see their master. When I would ask what the Lord was doing on these outings, everyone would keep the facts from me, like privileged secrets. No one would disclose anything clearly. Then, at the very moment I inquired, the Lord of the universe would reappear before us, putting our distress to an end and expanding our joy to an ocean. Whenever my mind by its own nature would become disturbed, the vast splendors of the Vaikuntha world would dispel my agitation as the sun dispels darkness. Whenever it seemed that I had not achieved the object of my desire, and when my heart would therefore suffer, as it often had before, I would remember the root cause of my incompleteness. And that understanding itself would drive away the pain. I'll read the commentary on this one. The dissatisfaction Gopakumar felt in Vaikuntha had been arranged to help him progress further to a world even more special and dear. There, he would discover the final success of his worship of Sri Madan Gopal's lotus feet. Meanwhile, the powerful influence of Vaikuntha kept him from feeling much distress, even though he had not yet attained his goal. By his intelligence, he could discern that the cause of his suffering was his desire to reach a special place beyond even Vaikuntha, and this understanding was enough to pacify him for the time being. He knew that now that he had reached Vaikuntha, he would surely feel fully satisfied, if not at once, then after only a very short while. Gopakumar thought, "Here, have not the slightest doubt," I would tell my mind. "There is no attainment more desirable than living here in Vaikuntha. So why even raise the question? Oh, fickle heart, now use your intelligence, therefore, to cast this lower nature far away. It doesn't belong here. There is nothing greater than to reside in Vaikuntha, no greater goal. Consider the hundreds of arguments that support this truth and achieve the highest peace." Unquote. After thus instructing my mind, I would look at myself in my Satchit Ananda form and see myself constantly relishing what seemed the highest happiness, intense and amazing, from worshipping the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha. Thus I resided in Vaikuntha, sometimes joyful, sometimes disturbed. Then one day Narada found me in a secluded place. That crest jewel of merciful persons, the Lord's dearmost devotee, is an ocean of tastes of the Lord's devotional service. He delighted me by blessing me and touching my head with his hand, which held its friend, the Veena. And then he spoke to me. I'm not going to read this section. It's long, like this long section. He's going to describe the cause of his lamentation. There's a lengthy section about deity worship, for those of you that would like to hear what Narada says about deity worship. And his conclusion is, your Ishtadev, your worshipable deity, is Madan Gopal. This is Narayana, the Lord of Vaikuntha. And Madan Gopal and Narayana, they're non-different, but they're different. And he's your Ishtadev. So let me take you to that place where you can see and directly experience and interact with Madan Gopal. First, I'm going to take you to Ayodhya. And if you want to continue, we'll also take you to Dwarka. So, I'm going to skip that section. Sri Gopakumara said, "These words of Narada greatly increased my anxious eagerness to see the lotus feet of Sri Gopal, my worshipable Lord. Quickly, a powerful storm-like urge arose in me, a hope to achieve the kind of ecstasy that Narada had just described. Seeing me cast by this hope and eagerness into an ocean of sorrow, Narada consolingly spoke. Sri Narada said, "Although this topic is most confidential and should not be talked about here, by the weight of your anxiety, I am being forced to speak openly. Far from here lies Ayodhya, the splendid city of Raghupati, the divine master of the Raghu dynasty. And beyond that shines the city of Dwarka, dear to the divine master of the Yadus. Dwarka resembles the blessed and charming Mathura. Go to that Dwarka and worship with your eyes your beloved Lord. But first hear from me about an excellent method for approaching Ayodhya, a method approved by those whose only taste is for service to Lord Ramchandra's lotus feet." Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, the source of all incarnations, and simply by worshipping Him, everything can be obtained. Yet I shall give you teachings to help you achieve a special taste for the divine lotus feet of Lord Rama, the hero of the Raghus. Practice chants like this, quote, O Sita, O beloved husband of Sita, Raghunath, elder brother of Lakshmana, O Lord, dear master of Sri Hanuman. Unquote. And remember the qualities, beauty, and power of Lord Ramachandra, and as revealed in the Vedas and other scriptures. One should follow whatever path leads to attaining one's own worshipable deity. That is the most intelligent way to act. If, after you have seen the two lotus feet of Sri Ram, your hankering to see your Lord is unappeased, then Rama, whose heart is soft from overflowing compassion, will happily send you to Dwarka. While going there, perform the Lord's Sankirtan, as it has been described, and you will finally see your own dear Lord, whom you have so long desired to see, the charming Sri Krishna Chandra, surrounded by the Yadus. Ayodhya, Dwarka, and other such abodes are all regions of Vaikuntha. Surely, therefore, you need not take permission from the Lord of Vaikuntha to leave and go there. By his order, I have come here to see you. He's like giving him the etiquette. You can go, it's okay. You don't have to say please. It's he sent me here. He knows your heart. He knows the movements of everyone's heart. And you should know that from my mouth you have received his order. In any case, the Lord has gone somewhere to bestow his favor on one of his great devotees. Since you will be unable to tolerate having to wait for him, now is the best time for you to go. Sri Gopakumar said, overjoyed at hearing this, I bowed down repeatedly to Sri Narada, took his blessings, and set out, remembering his instructions. After traveling a long way, I saw some forest monkeys restlessly jumping here and there and shouting, Rama! Rama! As I proceeded, they gathered around me and tried to grab my flute from my hand. Then I saw some humans who were even more beautiful than the associates of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Those men, in behavior like the best of civilized persons, could not tolerate my bowing down to them and showing other signs of respect. They brought me to the boundary of their city through the main gate. I'm going to read the commentary here. Both the humans and the monkeys escorted Gopakumar into Lord Ramchandra's city. When they reached the gateway, Gopakumar was so overwhelmed with ecstasy from seeing these associates of the Lord, that he could not enter on his own strength, but only with their help. Lord Ramchandra must have sent these devotees out of the city to meet Gopakumar, because without the Lord's order, such devotees, exclusively dedicated to the rasa found at his lotus feet, would never have ventured so far away. Gopakumar could not behave with the men he saw the same way as with the residents of Vaikuntha, because these devotees of Lord Ramchandra did not allow him to show any respect. They were just like the best of Aryans in their behavior, very modest, and considerate to everyone. Indeed, the civilized Aryans have learned many of their standards of conduct from the devotees of Lord Rama. Next text. There, before me, I saw Bharata with Shatrughna, seated comfortably with monkeys like Sugriva, Angada, and Jambavan, and surrounded by many handsome men. Thinking Bharat to be Ramachandra, Lord of the Raghus, I recited prayers addressed to that Lord. But Bharata covered his ears and repeatedly forbade me to continue, saying, I'm only a servant. I said that in Vaikuntha, in case you weren't with us yesterday. This is elevated spiritual consciousness. Afraid. I stood motionless with joined palms before Lord Bharat. Hanuman then quickly made me leave that place and enter the inner precincts of the city, where I saw the most amazing sight. The Supreme Lord in his form as the best of human beings. He sat comfortably on a royal throne of the best of palaces, a palace full in all charming attractions. Happy and marked with all the signs of a great personage, he seemed somewhat like Lord Narayana. But certain especially attractive features distinguished him from that Lord. His hand was adorned with a bow. His glances were delightfully modest and humble. Playing the role of a perfect king, he followed all the prescribed rules of religious behavior. I was bewildered by the overflowing ecstasy of his darshan, and I fell down before him as if offering prostrated obeisances. My confusion thus robbed me of the supreme benefit of seeing him. But then, by his mercy, I was able to stand up again and to see him clearly. Sri Hanuman left me, pulled back by his own regular service, and in a single jump went to join his Lord. On the left of the Lord, pleasing him with her service, stood the dear counterpart, Sita, and on his other side, his younger brother, Lakshmana. Sri Hanuman sometimes stood in front of the Lord, fanning him with excellent white chamaras and singing his glories. And sometimes, palms joined, he praised the Lord with wonderful prayers of his own composition. At one moment he carried a white umbrella. At another he massaged the Lord's lotus feet. And yet another he did several kinds of services all at once. Amazingly, he was not in the least fatigued by all this. Overwhelmed by the greatest joy, I bowed down again and again, saying, all glories, all glories. Then that soft-hearted Lord soothed me fully with the gentle nectar of his supremely impressive words. The Supreme Lord said, my dear son of a cowherd, my best friend, well done, well done. By showing such affection, you have conquered me. Enough with all this exertion, now just relax. You have made me, your dear friend, unhappy for long enough. Commentary. With these words, Lord Ramachandra congratulates Gopal Kumar for his victorious entrance into Ayodhya. The Lord repeats himself, sadhu, sadhu. Well done, well done. To tell the extent of his joy, he assumes that the long journey must have been very strenuous. So he asks Gopakumar simply to rest a while, and perhaps Gopakumar can remain in Ayodhya for an extended time. In any case, at least he should take a break from offering so many needless dandavats and prayers. These displays of reverence cause pain to the Lord, who considers Gopakumar a close friend. Continuing, the Lord spoke, "Please, get up, get up. All good fortune to you. Give up this formal respect. Dear friend, I am always controlled by such pure love as yours." Sri Gopakumar said, "On the Lord's order, Hanuman then raised me from the ground and brought me by force to where the Lord was resting his sacred lotus feet. It then came to my mind that all my long-cherished desires had borne fruit beyond what I had ever hoped. And where else could I have achieved such perfection? I stayed there for some time, as before, in my own dress as a cowherd boy. And the fullness of bliss I tasted overwhelmed me. I saw the unique pastimes of the divine lion of the Raghus, who was playing the role of the king of kings, acting in strict accord with religious principles. But, there's always a but. I did not see the unique sweetness I had found within the varied, playful pastimes of my worshipable deity's lotus feet. Nor did I find his special mercy. Thus, even there in Ayodhya, I seemed unhappy. But, by hearing from Sri Hanuman the glories of Sri Ramachandra's lotus feet, and by directly seeing Lord Rama myself, I dispelled that mental distress. I imagined Lord Ramachandra to have all the qualities of my own worshipable deity, Madan Gopal. By the force of my previous spiritual practices, the land of Braja would impose itself upon my heart, along with a yearning for its special pastimes and mercy. When Sri Hanuman, the best of counselors, would notice this, he would save me by encouraging me with diverse clever arguments. So it says that Hanuman was an expert diplomat, as we know from Ramayana. He was sent for that purpose. So he knew how to pacify the heart. He knew the mood, he knew the words that would strike the heart, and he spoke them. Hanuman, an expert diplomat, knew how to advise Gopakumar in ways he was inclined to accept. So Gopakumar stayed for a long time without deciding to leave. Only Lord Rama could stop this cycle of discontent and appeasement. Last verse of this chapter. Finally, Sri Rama, whose heart is tender with unlimited compassion, and who knows the mind of everyone in the world, consoled me with his words of gentle affection. He said, "Go to Dwarka city and be happy." He ordered me, and he sent me off at once, together with the chief of the bears. So I'm going to go to Dwarka. We'll go to Dwarka just a little bit. Sri Gopakumar said, I then went to Dwarka. There I saw various groups of Yadavas along with their children. They were accompanied by some Brahmanas of Mathura and were enjoying themselves. I had wandered everywhere, but never before had I seen such a perfection of charm as that which shone in them, the people. Seeing them gave me such delight that I forgot everything I had in mind. And those Yadavas, the best of all-knowing sages, drew me into their company and embraced me. When they recognized me as the son of a cowherd from Govardhan Hill, their hearts melted in a flood of affection. And they took me by the hand and brought me into the inner precincts of the city. From a distance I saw the personality of Godhead brilliantly manifest. At leisure, in the vast assembly hall, Sudharma, he sat on the excellent cushion of an excellent throne made of gold and jewels. He was served by all of the many quintessential charms of the Lord of Vaikuntha and by many different splendors, greater and greater than even that Lord of Vaikuntha does not possess. Revealing his two beautiful arms for his devotees, Lord Krishna, the ocean of supremely wonderful pastimes, was worshipped by youthful maturity, softened by a touch of adolescent grace. His sublime gestures stole the hearts of his servants. Above him shone a broad white umbrella. At his two sides waved a pair of excellent yak-tail fans, and in front of him, upon a golden footstool, sat his divine slippers. All around him were various symbols of royalty befitting the ruler of kings among kings. And there were servants qualified to attend him, and transcendental opulences standing in rows before him. Rows of opulences. Sri Vasudev, Balaram, Akrura, and others sat to his right, each on his own seat. Gada, Satyaki to his left, and just before him sat King Ugrasena. Also nearby was the Lord's minister, Vikadru, with Kritavarma and several other prominent Vrishnis. Sri Narada was entertaining the Lord, making him smile with clever words, fine singing, and the music of his veena. Sri Garuda stood before the Lord, glorifying him with prayers, and Uddhava massaged the Lord's lotus feet and pleased him with affectionate, intimate remarks. Seeing from a distance the goal I had long desired to see, I fell unconscious, overburdened by love. Then the Lord, brimming with the exalted rasa of affection, told Uddhava to bring me close. Uddhava quickly came forward, delighted to see me in the dress of a cowherd boy. He carefully lifted me from the ground, brought me back to full awareness, and led me to the Lord's side with both hands. Then, the Lord, wanting to lift me and draw me to his side, placed his feet close to me. And, oh, Uddhava, with his own hand, firmly touched my head to those lotus feet. The Lord of my life then stroked me with his lotus hand as if to cleanse each of my limbs. He took the flute from my hand, looked at it, and apparently in great distress, silently shed tears. Guess what that was about? The next moment he said, "Is all well with you? Is your health good? I hope the place you came from is free from any misfortune." While speaking in this way, he again began to feel disturbed. He's feeling the pain of the residents of Vrindavan's separation from him. And Uddhava had to calm him. With a gesture, Uddhava indicated to the Lord those present before them in the assembly, Vasudeva and the other Yadava kings, and many, many kings and demigods and sages. The Lord opened his lotus eyes and glanced at the people in front of him. With difficulty, he somewhat calmed himself and then got up to enter his inner chambers. "Because I have now attained the Lord of my life, for whom I had yearned for so long, I was immersed in an ocean of joy. I had no idea what to say or what to do." As the chiefs of the Yadus began leaving, the Lord honored them with items such as pan and sandalwood paste, holding my joined palms to his right side. He took me with him as he entered the inner palace with Balaram and Uddhava. The Lord's 16,108 queens happily followed their husband along with their maidservants, and in front of the queens placed their mothers-in-law, Sri Devaki and Rohini. Among the queens were the goddesses Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Kalindi, and Mitravinda, and Satya, Bhadra, and Lakshmana. The Lord's other queens followed, headed by Rohini, all of them fit in every way to be his consorts, and all honored by groups of suitably qualified maidservants. With his two mothers, all these queens surrounding him shyly, the Lord entered his palace, followed also by several groups of young sons, who added to the splendor of that procession. Within his palace, he concealed the emotions he was feeling, and with apparent pleasure, he sat down on the best of thrones. But I saw the Lord appearing before me as if adorned by the company of Sri Yashoda and the beautiful young gopis and many young cowherd boys, seeing the object of my meditation holding my flute in his hand. I again fainted, overwhelmed by delight. Then Nandanandana himself, his mind moved by abundant compassion, quickly got up, and by the powerful touch of his lotus hand, he brought me back to consciousness and carefully cleaned the limbs of my body. It was now lunchtime, but the Lord didn't feel like eating. Only at the assistance of his mothers did he perform his noontime duties. That darling son of Devaki fed me something with his own hand, and only then took something himself for my satisfaction. The Lord sat his elder brother down within a circle of boys and fed them, just as he had before in his childhood pastimes. Uddhava knew the Lord's ecstasies very well, so he ate some of Krishna's Mahaprasad remnants and then took me, somewhat by force, to his own house. Only then did I completely return to normal consciousness, reflecting on what I had seen happened. I danced for a long time. And then I began to think. I said to myself, "Indeed, today I have achieved the ultimate perfection of all my desires. For with my very eyes I have seen the hero of Vraja with all his attractive charms, that same person upon whom I have always meditated in my heart. The next day I went with Uddhava and saw my Lord. But I was so beside myself with delight that I wasn't able to do more than that. While residing there in Dwarka, I constantly, abundantly received Lord Krishna's wonderful mercy. I tasted such a flood of supreme ecstasy that no one could tell of it in words, or even think of it within the mind. Not even a pure devotee of the Lord with a lifetime of Brahma. The happiness found in liberation is said to be supreme, multiplied many millions of times, it might be said to be equal to the joy of Vaikuntha. And if any joy still greater can be conceived, it is that which is found in Ayodhya. But the joy born in Dwarka, how can anyone even begin to describe it? Indeed, no faculty of mind or speech can grasp the joy a resident of Dwarka feels from having gained the only Lord of his life after a long time yearning to see him. Only those whose minds are fit can know that joy. After I had lived for some time there in Dwarka, some of the best of the divine Yadavas said something to me. Their hearts melted with eagerness to see everyone in the world happy, within without. The divine Yadavas said, "Dear friend, you have come to this place which is more full in supreme splendor than even Vaikuntha, and you are now our companion. We think it hardly fitting that you continue to dress like a miserable forest dweller. You don't fit in. This troubles our minds. So please, take on our type of dress and looks, which are naturally available to anyone who lives here." Sri Gopakumara said, "Even though these Yadavas insisted, I stayed like a poor, simple devotee, because in their dress I would have not been able to taste the special mood that appealed to my mind and to Lord Achyuta's. I became shy and fearful to go near the personality of Godhead when he was seated with his court and being served by his transcendental opulences. Sometimes I would see the Lord with four hands. I couldn't always see the special pastimes he performs in Vrajabhumi. Sometimes the Lord would go alone to visit his dear friends, the Pandavas, who stayed nearby. And so, because of desires long held but unfulfilled, my heart would feel tormented. But when I could see his beauty and qualities once again, my heart would again become peaceful." He goes through this phase again and again. Read a little bit more. His nectarian words revealed his mercy. How can my tongue even touch the unique happiness they created? During the several days that I spent this way in the house of Uddhava, if there were any unhappiness, I would conceal it by feigning happiness. One day I saw Narada come. I bowed down to him, and in utter joy and amazement, I spoke to him in the following way. "O Narada, best of the Lord's associates in the guise of an exalted sage, I see you just everywhere, in the heavenly planets, in Vaikuntha, and now here, looking just the same. How fascinated I am to see this." Sri Narada said, "My dear young cowherd, surely you have always been a curious boy, and so you are even now. Haven't I explained all this to you before? Just as the one personality of Godhead Sri Krishna exists in many forms and many places, so also do we, his servants. So it is with all of us, Sri Garuda, and other attendants, devotees like Sriman Hanuman, and our friend Uddhava, and others too, like these Yadavas. All the Lord's personal associates are at his hand, like playthings. They are always fully dedicated to his service. Each assumes a variety of forms, yet stays essentially one, just like the Lord himself. The Lord's names, his pastimes, and his favorite abodes, and everything that has to do with his service can assume various forms. And you should know that just as all these are eternally real, each of them is simultaneously one and many. What amazes me is that you still appear like this, playfully showing your same character as before. And even here, you seem always discontent and distressed at heart. That is most astonishing to me. Sri Gopakumar said, taking hold of Narada's feet, I bowed down and humbly told him, My Lord, you know everything about this. Then Narada smiled and spoke, looking at Uddhava's face. Sri Narada said, Just see, Uddhava, this cowherd's son, born at Govardhan, is seeking something unachievable for persons like you and me. Greatly agitated, he wanders here and there, never anywhere transcending the painful distress that is fixed in his heart. Indeed, Uddhava, you are always anxious to favor the residents of Braja. Then why not spend a moment to enlighten this boy who is present right beside you? The abode of Goloka is very far away, and the happiness relished there is inaccessible to both of us. And even the means to achieve that abode is so rarely obtained that we can only pray for it. Sriman Uddhava said, He was born in Vrajabhumi, and there he was engaged as a cowherd, and he is firmly established in the worship of Lord Gopal. He is surely much greater soul than you or I. Narada was delighted to hear this. He embraced Uddhava and enthusiastically told him, Please hurry and instruct him so that he may fulfill his desires. Uddhava replied, O great sage, since I am a Kshatriya by birth, in your presence I have no right to instruct him. Narada laughed very loudly and said to Uddhava, Even here in Vaikuntha you can't stop thinking of yourself as a Kshatriya. Smiling, Uddhava told him, What can I say? How can someone like me stop thinking himself a Kshatriya when even our Lord does not? So, in other words, Krishna in Dwaraka treats Uddhava like a Kshatriya, so he behaves like a Kshatriya for the pleasure of the Lord. Here in Vaikuntha, they're in Dwaraka, here in Vaikuntha, the Lord maintains the religious principles of civilized men, just as he does on earth. He behaves like a proper family man, conquers his enemies, shows respect to elders and brahmanas and so on. These words filled Narada's mind with pleasure, and he laughed, jumped up and down, and shouted in joy. Astonished, he spoke as follows. Sri Narada said, Indeed, just see the amazing charm and glory of the personality of Godhead's pastimes, and just see in those pastimes how seriously committed his devotees are to serving him, and him alone. Oh, How very curious that this Lord plays in the highest abode above Vaikuntha the same way in the world of mortals, just to satisfy his dear devotees. Even experienced devotees like me are bewildered to see such pastimes, which make us wonder whether we are in Dwarka or Vaikuntha or Dwarka in the material world. It is quite fitting that you devotees care only for prema bhakti, pure loving devotional service to the Lord's lotus feet, such prema bhakti for the Lord, who is very affectionate to his devotees, fulfills all their ambitions and is alone their final goal. You have no greater interest in acting as residents of Vaikuntha or sojourners in the material world, and he has no great interest in showing his opulence or getting involved in mundane relationships. You always live in utter humility, which most favorably nourishes devotion in pure love. And the Lord's pastimes of seeming absorbed in worldly pleasure amply evoke such love. Who can describe the greatness of the mature perfection of love of God, which makes the Supreme Lord act like an ordinary good friend? Oh, let me praise Krishna's mood as an ordinary friend, which does away with the respect and reverence of his devotees and expands their pure love for him. Sri Gopal Kumar continued, last verse. After saying this, the sage, Narada, was overwhelmed by the weight of love, swept up in various ecstatic transformations. He remained silent for a while. Then he spoke to me again, because he saw that I was troubled and keen for his instructions. So in the following instructions, he's going to explain the mood of Vrindavan, comparing the mood of Vrindavan to the mood of Dwarka and the mood of Vaikuntha, and explaining to him how he fits into the mood of Vrindavan. It's just his nature, and he's blessed by that nature. It's a very deep subject matter. Okay, it's 8:30. I don't know exactly what to say to summarize all of what we just read. One appreciation, at least, is these three personalities, Uddhava, outside of Vrindavan. It's said again and again that Uddhava is the most intimate with Krishna, most elevated in spiritual understanding, so elevated that it was Uddhava that Krishna chose to take his message to the gopis, so that Uddhava could experience the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And so he has first-hand appreciation of the residents of Vrindavan, and therefore his natural appreciation for Gopal Kumar and the kind of love that Gopal Kumar has. And Narada, so these two vastly learned persons, the Rishi amongst the Devas, the learned person who's the sage that advises the demigods, who has traveled everywhere and experienced everything, including in Vrindavan and Dwarka and Vaikuntha and the material world and all the places that Gopal Kumar saw him. And these two are going to, it's like a culminating section before he enters into Vrindavan, to explain the mood of Vrindavan in a very refined, delicate, sensitive way. Very elevated subject. And Gopal Kumar is the sojourner, hearing from these two personalities in Dwarka, having directly experienced the happiness of serving and seeing and having the lotus feet of the Lord placed on his head and some appreciation for Sanatana Goswami. You know, get out your binoculars and try to find how elevated is Sanatana Goswami. He's explaining Srimad Bhagavatam in such a beautiful way. Because what's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is, we know from the first canto, it's Vyasadeva's composition exclusively glorifying the personality of Godhead. But in so doing, he's differentiating, Vyasadeva in Bhagavatam is differentiating the different abodes in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In addition to differentiating Paramatma and Brahman realization, differentiating the various abodes of the personality of Godhead, the moods of love in those abodes, and the penultimate position of the love in Vrindavan and the residence of Vrindavan, and Uddhava knows it and Gopakumara is going to attain it. So it's Prabhupada liked to speak about the platform of renunciation of Sanatana Goswami, specifically saying that previously he was in a Saraswat Brahmin family. He had taken by force, he had taken the position of the prime minister of Nawab Hussain Shah's government, which was like, you know, half or so of the subcontinent of India today, and he walked away from it to go live as a mendicant in Vrindavan. And you know, the depth of his realization, having received Lord Chaitanya's mercy, was out of sight. So he's explaining Srimad Bhagavatam in this very, very beautiful way. So charming, so pleasing, so rasic, so filled with emotion, but at the same time very, very deep and profound, like incredible. So, last thing, I don't recommend you all go out and buy Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita and start reading it. I recommend that you read Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Ishopanishad, and those nice literatures, become very familiar with them, and then you start reading Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. And but just because we started off in this direction, we ended up in, inspired by Lo Gopal's, like, and read the next section too. Okay. But it gives you some appreciation of the brilliance of our Goswamis. At least, you know, one of them, six Goswamis, Sanatana Goswami, and his ability to relish the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam in this way. Any discussion? Yes. Gopakumar is a character, a personality that's described in starting with there's two parts to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and the first Brihad Bhagavatamrita begins, you can go back and listen to the recording, but I'll summarize quickly. It's Jaimini Rishi speaking Mahabharata to the son of Maharaj Parikshit, Janamejaya, the great grandson of the Pandavas, the king. The king is hearing from a sage, Mahabharata. And after hearing it completed, Janamejaya says, "Oh, this was so wonderful. Is there, I forget the technical term, a corollary literature? There's some term for it. Is there a corollary literature for this Mahabharata that you just recited?" And Janamejaya says, "Yes, there is. And I will now explain it to you." That's what this is. And it's in two parts. The first part opens with Narada, along with some other sages, spending 1 month in the month of Magh at Dashashvamedha Ghat, the coldest month, taking bath every day at this ghat and engaging in rituals and katha. So in the course of that discussion, they're appreciating how fortunate they are to, you know, they're reciting the scriptural statements that say, being here in this month, doing things that we're doing, how fortunate. And then they start to consider, who's the most fortunate person? And they come up with a suggestion, a certain brahmana, most fortunate. The brahmana happens to come to that Dashashvamedha Ghat and, you know, does his puja right there at the side of the ghat, worshipping his shila. Big festivity. And anyway, so it goes from there. Narada approaches the person, "Oh, you're the most fortunate person." Say, no. Like these, you know, they're doing here in Vaikuntha and Dwarka. No. Just a servant. But if you want to know who is, then he goes to that person, that next person. So the whole thing ends, he ends up in Dwarka, hearing from Krishna, this is Narada, hearing from Krishna the very special glory of Vrindavan. Krishna is explaining it to all the queens. All of them assemble except Satyabhama. She's like playing, you know, a game. And so Krishna scolds her, "You come here. I want you to hear this." Yes. So he then explains the glories of the residents of Vrindavan, why he feels the way he does, even in Dwarka, even with those pure devotees in Dwarka, why he feels the way he does. That ends the first part. The second part, the author, Sanatana Goswami, says, that was just a prelude to now explaining Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where the scene opens with a little boy, a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, who was born in Vrindavan, and his name is Kumar. Gopa Kumar. And he's herding cows with his other Gopa friends. And one day, or in the passage of time, they see one Brahmin who seems to be very absorbed in his practices and his mood of devotion. They become attracted, especially Gopa Kumar. And he goes and hears from him. It becomes like a regular thing. He brings prasadam and, you know, hears from him. And eventually he asks him, can you initiate me into a mantra? And the Brahmin says, yes. Go take your bath. I explained this previously. Take your bath in the Jamuna, come back and I'll give you the mantra. Sit down. He gives him mantra. Like, there's the picture. He's giving him mantra. And then in the course of just uttering the mantra, the Brahmin swoons and faints. And Gopa Kumar also swoons and faints, and when Gopa Kumar comes to external consciousness, the Brahmin's gone. But he's now initiated, and he's like chanting his mantra. And from chanting his mantra, his desire to attain the Lord of his mantra, who is Madan Gopal, it's a Madan Gopal mantra, he goes to all these different experiences, seeking the Lord of his mantra. And by divine arrangement, he goes to so many places. He goes to this place, that place, the other place, this world, goes to Puri, goes to so many places. Many, he's transported to other places. And the conclusion, he's going to return to Gokula. And he's narrating this to one Brahmin who, somewhere in the course of the first part, this the second part, there's a Brahmin who also was from Vrindavan, and he left Vrindavan because he became attracted. He heard the glories of some worship that Brahmins do in a certain place, so he went there. And he came back and, you know, ended up back in Vrindavan and was feeling very unhappy. And he saw Gopal Kumar. He asked Gopal, "Why am I feeling unhappy?" Gopal Kumar said that I'll tell you my own story. That by telling it, it will help you understand why you're unhappy. That's who Gopal Kumar is. Anything else? Yes?
I got a couple questions. So Narada explains to Gopal Kumar that the reason he's feeling dissatisfaction by Kunta is because his worship deity is not in Gopal. So I found it interesting that even in Vaikuntha it is possible to feel dissatisfaction.
It's transcendental. It's fully transcendental. It's not that residents in Vaikuntha are feeling, "Oh, I don't like it here." It's a transcendental situation because of his exalted nature of his love for that reason. And?
Guru Maharaj sort of said that Hanuman did not go back with the Lord. So, but Hanuman is also in Ayodhya. So the understanding is that he's...
Well, Narada gave the explanation. Did you hear it?
Just like the Lord, others.
Yeah, for the Lord's satisfaction, these devotees manifest in various ways. And I didn't read the commentary. I don't even know if the commentary explains the technology of how that happens. But he's explaining that it happens. For the Lord's satisfaction, the devotees appear in various ways. Now, it doesn't say simultaneously or that chronologically at the same time there are multiple places. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say it's not that either. So there are a number of things in Brihat Bhagavatamrita that are, like, you know, beyond what we're accustomed to hearing, and then we start wondering what's that. Without commentary, I'm not going to comment. I'll take a moment to see what it says in the commentary to that particular verse, that little section. Commentary. Devotees like Garuda and Shesha are associates of the Lord of Vaikuntha, whereas Hanuman, Jambavan, and others are servants of Lord Ramachandra. Hanuman sings the glories of Lord Ram in the Kimpurusha Loka, of the Bhuloka region, and simultaneously in the Ayodhya of Vaikuntha. And Uddhava, whom Gopal Kumar can see right before him, is simultaneously one of the principal companions of Krishna in Dwarka on earth, along with the Yadavas, the Pandavas, and others. Considering the topic too confidential to bring up just now, Narada chooses not to mention Krishna's devotees in Sri Goloka. And that's all it says. Anything else? Yes.
You said the mood of personality of Godhead is different between Indian devotees. How can you understand the difference between different devotees?
How can you not understand? I mean, do you have different moods? Is your mood in the workplace the same as the mood at home? And when you're with, attending RT, you know, you're one person. So for the Shruti mantras say, Raso Vai Saha. Within that explains. Saha, the absolute truth, is rasa, which means he is the abode of all rasa. And like Prabhupada says commonly, variety is the mother of enjoyment. The Lord is the best of enjoyers. He is rasa. And so he experiences various moods. To experience those various moods, he manifests various dhams and various forms and various devotees who just want to please the Lord because they are pure love. So there's all variety in the spiritual realm. He has various forms with different moods, and he's enjoying. And the devotees are enjoying, assisting his enjoyment. That's their enjoyment. And they're made for that. Okay. Yes.
Thank you for this. Just as Gopal Kumar is driven to a certain destination by his nature.
Spiritual nature.
As we're taught to strive for going back to Godhead, and we read about the highest example is the gopis in Vrindavan, and is aspiring for that, is it in any way contrary? Would we find ourselves confused a little, like Gopa Kumara, our destination was actually supposed to be Ayodhya, Vaikuntha?
We can't compare our situation to what he's going through, so don't even go there. You'll end up speculating and spinning and crashing. Don't. Our position is, our aspiration, say it this way, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, which we are the recipients of, is such that it awakens that kind of love, which is the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Namo Mahadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. However, at the same time, some of Lord Chaitanya's very intimate associates, like Murari Gupta, was a devotee of Ram. However, in general, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, those who are receiving his mercy, he awakens that. And that's sufficient. Something else? Yes.
Maharaj, actually, Prabhu was asking something similar, like what I had in mind, so I don't know if it's appropriate.
Go ahead. Sure.
But these 4 days, Maharaj, you were virtually taking us through a tour of Vaikuntha. Like, we were experiencing it through your words. Like, it's kind of so inspirational to be there. But like for me, like it's like a lost child or like somebody viewing a star from way millions and millions of miles away. It's way there. I mean, like I'm
okay.
In the lower rung of the major people.
Fine.
Because the reason is like we are trapped in this box, like the crab. We are trapped in this material world.
Yes.
How the crabs are trapped in an open box. The box is open.
Yeah.
We still have the. But we chose to be away from.
That's right.
We aspire to go back to Him.
Yeah.
The way is open, but we are blocked by the other crab. You know, like when the crab tries to climb out of the box, how the co-crab, you know, they try to pull it back. We are like stranded by this, not single-stranded rope, but like multi-rope, you know?
Yeah.
Like through words, through family, through friends, and the circle, they're trying to pull us back into the box.
Gotcha.
So, how would you guide us to experience, at least to come to the rim of the
box? Well, one of the reasons that I went ahead and read this with some reservation, the reservation I mentioned at the end, I would not want to see as a result of this everyone going out and buying Brihad Bhagavatamrita and not reading Prabhupada's commentary and presentation, because that's what we need because we're here. But reading these things is to like a little light in the darkness to say, yes, I want to go there. Yes, I want to go there. I'm in this dark place. I want to go there. So now back to your question. The Bhagavatam teaches again and again and again and again and again that simply by hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting the topics of Krishna, Krishna Katha, Shrinvatasva Katha Krishna, just by hearing those topics, the bondage, the box, dissipates. That which we can't get out of on our own effort, just by hearing and chanting topics of Krishna, it dissipates and eventually dissolves. So then, it's not only freedom, but it's illumination. We know what to do. Not just freedom to like get caught again. I was just today hearing Srila Prabhupada explain very simple. He said there's this common story, some common story about a hunter cast a net and he caught some little birds. And there's the mother bird. And there's the father bird, and they see the little baby birds caught in the net. So, panic. The mother bird flies into the net to rescue the baby birds. And she gets caught in the net. And then Prabhupada said, and the male bird, he sees the baby birds and the mother bird got caught in the net. And then he's considering what to do. And then he laughed. He said he took sannyas. He said, but most people don't. They see, but they don't see. Pashyati na pashyati. Just like, you know, your description. But zoom, zoom, zoom. Go right ahead and continue, you know, the same activity the same way and get captured by box, the net of birth, death, disease, and old age, and continuing and continuing. So what to do, which is your question, when you are in that situation? The recommendation of the Bhagavatam is stay in your position, stane stita. Don't, you know, do reckless, you know, impulsive things. Stay in your position and engage in hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord and trying to serve with that mood. And by that, the bondage is broken. Using these metaphors, the net slackens and there's freedom. Or the box dissipates because it's an illusory one. The soul has nothing to do with this. It's the mood of trying to be the enjoyer of this that keeps us in the box. That's happiness. We've been told it since, you know, day one. And we bought into it and we're trying to make it happen. And we have our moments of realizing, wait a minute, is this, what are we doing here? But the transcendental position doesn't say give it up. The transcendental position says hear and chant and remember about the personality of Godhead and awaken the mood of love. Then, and therein there's freedom. And then the verse that we've been, whoops, over there, the verse we've been discussing for four mornings in a row, in all of those activities, worldly activities, the in-the-box activities, one can experience and connect with the personality of Godhead, starting with it directly and then indirectly. It's the position of freedom. In this life and after this life. Not what the option is. It looks like freedom in this life, but there's not freedom. It's bondage and bondage in the next life, and just keep doing it. Just keep flying into the net, or just keep crawling into the box. And the freedom is the freedom of consciousness, and with the freedom of consciousness, then the circumstances are not binding. Although one may be acting within them, they're not binding. And it's that the strength for that to happen is from hearing and chanting. There's potencies within these topics that awaken consciousness, divine consciousness, and connect one to the Supreme. That's where your attention should go as much as you can in the course of the activities of life, everyday activities. And taking the association of devotees who do those activities together with sincerity, with that purpose in mind, not just some social, but with a spiritual purpose in mind. That's the key to get out. Anything else? Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.